Hi, and welcome to Take Note, the podcast about keeping a notebook. I'm Adam. Ted, how are you?
I'm great, Adam. How are you?
I am good. I'm doing well. Ted, on this show, we talk about what we've written in our notebook. We call that segment, What Do You Got? So, Ted, I'm going to ask you, got good gots, Ted?
Okay, so I went to an orientation for summer day camp and just witnessed the glory of the wonderful and strange human beings who run summer camps for kids. And at one point, the head counselor, not necessarily the head administrator of the camp, gave his little presentation to the parents, and I just immediately realized that I needed to be taking notes on what he was saying.
Because it was of vital importance to your child's life?
I'm good. Well, you be the judge. I'm going to run down. These are direct quotes, okay? Talking about pool safety. If they have a blue wristband and they can't swim, we call them floaters. Okay, let's see then. Talking about nut allergies, nut free. We don't know if the donut was made in a peanut factory or what. Okay, let's see. Talking about daily activities. In the gym, we play basketball, half soccer, no dodgeball, four corners, line tag, a lot of stuff like that. Describing an activity, a successful activity from the previous year, said it was some kind of big, exciting tournament that had a fantastic culmination, where a younger kid got to the very end of the tournament. It was like ping pong or something against an older kid. And, you know, the counselors, they really enjoyed it, and they're getting paid, so you can't always tell if they're faking it or whatever. And then finally on staff selection, he said, we do background checks on everybody. Those checks go to three different organizations, FBI, CIA. Not CIA? We'll get there. What do you got, Adam?
Here's what I've got. You know, Ted, that I work in a co-working office. So yes. Today, the community manager, by which I mean the lady at the front desk, she walked up to me, and she had a FedEx to give me, and she said, "Hey, I haven't seen you in a while." And I said, "I was here yesterday. We talked for a while."
I never comment on anything.
Never comment.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Just never.
You think I should have just said, "Yeah, nice to see you," right?
No. I meant from her point of view. Yeah. Never comment on something.
Right.
Never provide external commentary.
Yeah. Here's
hello. How are you? Good to see you. Great. How's it going? Great. Bye. Don't say, "Oh, have you?" It reminds me of, you know, the whole, like, "Wow, are you pregnant?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, don't comment on anything, ever.
On her first day, she introduced herself to me. And on her second day, she introduced herself to me. And I said, "Yeah, we met yesterday."
Oh, man. Just building the community up one day at a time. Managing that community like a boss.
Yep. What do you got?
This one is from my 6-year-old daughter. She actually said it out loud, and then I forced her to write it in my notebook so it could become a "What do you got?" It's written in very charming 6-year-old handwriting in purple pen. "Seems like this is pen losing season for people." She said it in a much cuter fashion.
It is pen losing season. It's a season of shorts. I feel like shorts have shorter pockets. Things are easier to fall out.
I have lost Every beach trip that we've taken in the last month, which is two of them, mm-hmm. I have lost a pair of prescription glasses, like my normal daily glasses.
Really?
Two beach trips,
wow.
Two lost pair of glasses. I lost my Warby Parkers, and then I lost my Lens Crafters. Hmm. I'm down to my naked eyeballs.
Can you see with those?
Yeah.
That's why I have not sent you your Baron Fig pen back yet. Just trying to get us clear out of pen losing season, Ted. I'm doing you a favor.
I appreciate you saving me from myself. What do you got, Adam?
All right, Ted. So, as you know, I found it necessary to follow DoorDash Help on Twitter, the Twitter yes. account that we share.
Just to remind everybody, you don't really get to know someone until you share a Twitter account with them that you have to sign your own name to every tweet.
Yes.
So that the adoring public knows who just tweeted it from your shared
right.
account.
That way they know who earned one like.
And you never know who the other may have followed or unfollowed. We have no checks on each other's Twitter behavior.
I think we are the check on each other's Twitter behavior.
It's a better kind of Twitter, I would say. It leads to more thoughtful tweetering.
That's right. It does lead to more thoughtful tweetering. But unfortunately, it also leads to you having to see some of... So when you follow DoorDash Help, which I followed because I needed some DoorDash help, then what you see is you see the complaints that DoorDash gets because... you're following their responses, basically. And I found that I should turn it off, but I can't because I'm too amused. And I'm going to read you one of the recent great ones.
Okay.
How can we trust DoorDash is hiring the right people? Just had a grown man attempting to ask my 12-year-old daughter out on a date and telling her she's beautiful and if she was single. Disturbing. I'll get this stuff my damn self. Except he swore. I don't know why I didn't just repeat the swear. And then he's got odd hashtags, like hashtag pervert, hashtag safety, hashtag family, hashtag not on my watch. I actually got to say, I just don't believe this person at all. But that is not why I'm sharing this, Ted. DoorDash responds, and they respond in almost the same way every time. Hey, Slay Bay Bay, that's the account that tweeted it. We can help out with that. Send us a direct message. So they can help out with the grown man attempting. Anyways, yeah.
So DoorDash Help, IKEA Help, I believe we followed for a time. I might have unfollowed that one.
But that was for stationary reasons. I wanted to find out if they were eliminating that pencil.
Basically, you and I on Twitter are like roommates where you keep inviting... I like service people over to do work that you don't tell me what it is. I come home and they're repairing something and then they're there for a really long time and then you make friends with them. So then the repairman is coming over for beers.
That doesn't sound like me, but
yeah.
Well, I agree. It is like we're roommates. I'm like, you're the roommate that just invites anyone who's ever said the word baseball over. What do you got, Ted?
I just wrote this observation down. Parenting means never being able to find the time to measure your own head in order to purchase a frivolous hat. I have had a hell of a time finding time to measure my own head. And I've actually measured it twice. But written down the results and then lost those results.
You should put it in a notebook.
I should, and I don't. I'm under pressure every second of the day. I can barely.
Is the reason you're not writing it down in the notebook is because you're using the little ruler on the inside cover of the notebook to measure it?
See. You're already thinking four steps ahead of me. No, it's because I'm trying to find a ruler, a fine string. Pinch it in the right place when I can't see it. Then, you know, some kid comes up and starts screaming at me and it all goes straight to hell. What else you got, Adam?
So, all right. So I'm sitting in a coffee shop. There's a middle-aged woman sitting there across from a man, and all of a sudden she goes, "He's a dumb shit. Oh, excuse me." And then she goes on, "This is so blah, 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 blah." And then the guy goes, "Okay, what's your background?" And she says, "HR consulting and sales." And I was just delighted that this turned out to be an interview.
Well, I love that. I love, how long do you think he waited to say, what's your background? I feel like that was, he was like, what can I say to get things on track or to get out of this? Or
right. It actually reminded me of, last week we talked about how we don't like when other people are getting to know one another and we have to listen to it. So I guess my hell would be sitting next to a bunch of, like, first round job interviews.
Well, how many job interviews, what percentage would you say take place in Starbucks? Because I'm willing to guess that it's 40%.
It's baffling. It's something. I had a job interview when I lived in Gainesville, Florida. A lady invited me to a McDonald's for a job interview. I did not take that job.
All right, Adam, so you wanted to catch us up on the latest from our favorite manufacturer of pocket notebooks.
Yeah, Field Notes, they tweeted out a photo, or I don't know, on some social channel, they tweeted out a photo of all the different size notebooks that they've put out, all the oddly sized notebooks, and the caption was size-wise, and it got me thinking that maybe the summer release, which they have not announced yet, but which should be coming around in, I don't know, a week or so, probably, that maybe it's going to be an odd size again. And so I just thought that maybe we could talk about any unusually shaped notebook sizes that we could see ourselves wanting. So I like the pocket notebook. I particularly like that the notebook kind of always feels sort of the same in your hand because you're using the same size notebook all the time. But I like finding uses for their oddly shaped size notebooks.
Coffin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to kind of like, when they give you something new, it's good to...
No, coffin-shaped notebook. That's what I want to see.
Oh, you want to... I thought you said office. You'd like a coffin-shaped notebook. Sure. And what would you write in that?
Obituaries.
Mm-hmm.
Vendettas.
Vendettas. I like that.
Things in blood.
Right.
My own.
Use some red ink. Absolutely.
Well, so what shapes are left? Let's say that. What else is out there?
Well, okay, so, you know, sometimes it's wider, sometimes it's taller, but what they haven't really done, they haven't made it deeper. And what I think I've suggested on this show before, I would like them to do, instead of 3 48-page notebooks, like one notebook-sized notebook that's 150 or 200 pages, maybe perfect bound, something like that. And I don't know what I would use it for exactly. But I guess in a way it would be like their dime novel edition that they did that had more pages. It was perfect bound. But I like the idea of that in the height and width of the typical Field Notes dimensions.
Just a monster notebook.
Yeah.
I've been drawn to that lately, and actually I've got my Clairefontaine larger format. I don't remember. Maybe it's A5. And it's got something like, you know, 100 and however many pages. And it's well-bound and it's substantial. It feels more like a novel. And I actually got my inspiration for picking up one of those from occasional co-host and hopefully 50th episode contributor Ryan Sly, who got himself I'm going to butcher the first part of it, but it's the Seven Seas notebook. I don't remember the Japanese brand name that goes ahead of that, but it's filled with Tomoe River paper, and it's something like 400 some odd pages. And it's just an amazing thing to hold, and it really has that feeling of long-term sort of engagement with this thing. And it's opens flat, and it's, you know, Ryan does an awesome job of, you know, he'll find some great inks and some great fountain pens and really make the most out of writing in this big book. And so I did, you know, with my Clairefontaine, I kind of did a little mini version of that, and I really enjoy it. I've been working on our 50th episode project in that book. All of this to say, I think that's a really cool idea. So just a big, fat notebook.
Yeah.
Kind of a cooler composition notebook, for example, which I know, I don't mean that literally. I mean that more in terms of how people use them and how they feel in your hand. I think it'd be a great, great idea. And it would be shaped like a coffin, right? That was part of, that's part of your concept as well.
Yeah, I was quick with coffin. That's right. This is the Nanami Paper Seven Seas notebook. Seven Seas
there
Writer.
You go.
Looks great.
That thing. $32 of just pure gold.
Nice.
They have one at the at Drumgoole's, my neighborhood stationery store here in Houston. I picked one up and it was all that I could do to hold myself back. And if I didn't have this Clairefontaine, I probably would have pulled the trigger.
Is there any sort of shape or type of notebook, or, you know, assuming it's a different size, that you think would be useful for you? Something that you'd like?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to. They've covered, you know, the EndNotes was sort of the reporter size, tall and narrow, with different setups. So they kind of covered that base. They could do, you know, I do like. Baron Fig makes the desk jotter, which I've picked up again recently.
Mm-hmm.
That's very wide and big. And it's got that kind of laid in front of your keyboard while you're working and take notes. So, I mean, I think there's – and they – I can't remember who made that. Someone has a notebook that's expressly for that. I can't remember if it's Baron Fig or somebody else.
You know, I forgot about that EndNotes edition, and that was only in the fall. And scratch this prediction, and I'm going to guess that they are not going to mess with the size again, because typically they don't have two non-notebook size or two non-memo book size editions in the same year. So maybe
I feel uncomfortable out field noting you with that one.
Well,
I heard it in your voice as I reminded you of the EndNotes.
Yeah, you've killed me a little bit.
Okay, switching gears. I recently installed real speakers in my home and attached a vintage record player that was in my aunt's attic for a couple of decades until she said, hey, do you want this thing? And I said, you bet I do. So I am having a renaissance of listening to records. And I'm always into music, but it's got me in this place with music that just feels very in sync with what we do on the podcast, just in terms of keeping in touch with the physical things around us and the way those physical things spur on creativity I don't know, just being thoughtful with what you're picking and choosing and doing and seeing and saying. And it's just been really cool. And it's not even from an audiophile standpoint, although that I have enjoyed the crackles and the pops on the old Simon and Garfunkel albums that I haven't listened to in, you know, 10 years. I don't know. I just wanted to take note of that. This is not even related to the record player, but Hadestown, you may have heard.
Heard it here first, Ted.
Well, if I gave the impression that I launched Anais Mitchell's career, that is not the impression that I want to give. Now,
did you? Yes. Is that the impression you want to give?
In 2003,
no.
Is it possible that she was ready to give up music, but for the residential advisor who booked her for that coffee lounge show, steered her back on course to pursue her dream? I'm not going to say it's not possible. I'm not going to say it's true. but anyway, my fellow Middlebury College alum had a really big night at the Tonys. And the thing to know, I think, is that she put out an album of that music in 2010, which is just seems like an amazing creative progression that she actually made reference to in her speech, in which she said something along the lines of, "It's going to take a long time, but it'll be worth it." So from a creative standpoint, that's awesome. But the music is just killer on that 2010 album, which is on Spotify. Bon Iver is on there. Greg Moore is on there. I think Ani DiFranco. It's just this awesome, visceral, kind of drum beat, heavy, dark, folky, but just weird, you know, kind of gothic folk. It's fantastic. And, I mean, that's the kind of record that I would hunt down.
Ted, you know, if I go into my Gmail and I search Anais Mitchell, do you know the first reference that I get?
What?
It's Newbery Comics 2007 when she put out the record. There is nothing that you ever wrote to me about Anais Mitchell. So I know that you were expecting the opposite. No, sorry.
The other thing I did was go to a record store, which was... It's a longtime Houston music store called Cactus Music, but they have adapted to the current climate by basically, you know, you used to go and get your CDs there and your tapes, but now records take up probably, you know, 60-70% of the store. And they even throw it back to their old moniker when they first started, the Record Ranch. That's what they were called before they switched their name. So now they kind of jokingly refer to the record section, which is most of the store, as the Record Ranch at Cactus Music. But
did you buy a record there?
I bought a bunch of records. They had a bunch of dollar records where I've got some Joan Baez and some Harry Belafonte and kind of old school stuff. But then they have new records, which are, and this is, and what's kind of been interesting is that, you know, to buy a new record, even of kind of reissues of classic stuff, it'll cost you $23-$25, which just totally changes your relationship to the music, and you become a kind of raw consumer. Not raw, but the money becomes part of the transaction, whereas on Spotify, which I'm a huge Spotify user, I have become sort of this gluttonous. You can just listen to anything at any time with absolutely no limitations. And so it's this really interesting swing back to having to be really thoughtful about what you're going to pick up at the record store.
Yeah. So I got a few thoughts on records and consumerism of records, et cetera. First, I mean, I wonder if Robert Christgau is still doing his Consumer Guide to Music. Have you ever read those columns?
No.
So, old Village Voice columnist for decades, and he gave grades to every single record, and he called it the Consumer Guide. And the idea was, if you're buying records, you want to know how many songs. It was very much like, how many songs on this record are worth it? And he was tough on everything. And it's great. I mean, the last time I checked, they're all online. There's a great archive of them. Capsule reviews of every record. So good. The next thing that I was wondering about is what brand record player do you have? Because we had a Crosley and it just started wobbling and I didn't know what the hell to do with it.
This thing is a Pioneer. It's a nice kind of tabletop. It's got the nice little bow. I don't know anything from record players, but it's old, and I looked it up and the resale seems to be pretty strong, so I think I just stumbled onto a pretty high quality record player, and really hooking it up to nice speakers. That's the key.
Nice. I've never had that. I guess my third question would be, how many copies of John Prine's German Afternoons do you have on vinyl?
I have a couple of stuff. So I had my. You know, it's easy to look back at when you could just pick up 100 records for $3 a piece. Because now they have those same records, even the old ones on the shelf for $17 and 20. You know, I think, well, I should have been lugging around four times this many. But I'm happy I preserved some John Prine records from back in my more college-y record listening days. And but there's no doubt that it's heavy-duty infrastructure. It took me a long time to get it up and running. I had a feeling it would be worth it, so I hung with it. But it's not easy when everything is easy right now.
Right.
But I think you see really a lot of people, at least a lot of people in our kind of analog-friendly zone, reverting back to records. And I think that's why it's the satisfaction of something that takes a little more work, and then it really forces you to sit down and enjoy and think about what you're listening to and listen to the snaps and crackle and pops and slow down a little bit, turn it over halfway through. I mean, just those little things really change the way you listen.
It's when you've got a wobbly record player in one corner of the room and you've got every recorded song ever in the palm of your hand and a Wi-Fi enabled speaker, it is hard to be mindful about what you're listening to. But it's hard to make that choice. It's hard to make that choice to stick with the records. But I think in the next week, I'll try to really be mindful about the music that I'm listening to.
And yeah, maybe the final thing I'll say is that there is a bridge, because I think, you know, one thing I do is watch a lot of YouTube videos, which is like an amazing font of like archival stuff and live performances that just can really, really round out what you know about an artist. And you shared the latest WTF with Mark Maron podcast episode with Mavis Staples. And she gets with it on Bob Dylan and the Staple Sisters and just some of her amazing experiences. So that's a big recommend. And I don't know, man. Music is just... Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention is to check out the Erasable podcast episode, in which they dig in on music too, and they take the angle of music they listen to while they write.
It's all music played with pencils, right?
Yes. Yeah. Tip-tapping on coffee mugs.
How to turn your pencil into a guitar. How to turn your pencil into drumsticks. How to turn your pencil into a trumpet. Those guys are creative.
Let's do this again next week, Adam. What do you say?
Yeah, our 50th and final episode next week.
You can find us on twitter.com/takenotepod, and you can also find us at some blog content, some other stuff at takenote.space. It doesn't sound like a website, but it is.
Barely.
We'll talk to you next time, Adam.